Welcome to Ballistic Radio. Join us as we discuss hard-won self-defense lessons, as well as the information you need to survive a violent encounter. Listen as armed professionals, industry experts, national champions, and gunfight survivors help answer all your firearms and self-defense questions while exploring your rights and responsibilities as an armed citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. And now, here is your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com. Get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, photos, videos, other stuff at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Co-hosting with me, Melody Lauer.
Hello.
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 So,
what's up?
Yeah, I don't know. So we still sound tired. So there's going to be like a month of episodes where we just sound like we're dying and people are going to be like, God, are they okay? Just understand that we're recording them all at once at the end of a really, really long 10 days.
I could start slapping myself in the face and see if that helps.
Wow. Okay. You do you. Hey, guess what?
What? What?
This segment brought to you by Lucky Gunner and Federal Premium Ammunition. Whether there was a firefight or you do in fact want to worry about that little guy, you need more ammo. And when it's time to restock, you can't beat Federal Premium Ammunition at LuckyGunner.com. With a shipping department that's always moving at 88 miles per hour, if I order a case of American Eagle from Lucky Gunner on a Thursday, it's at my doorstep ready to shoot before the weekend starts. Head to LuckyGunner.com today to check out their in-stock lineup of Federal Premium Ammunition. And remember, unless you're on fire or drowning, you can never have too much ammo.
You know what's funny about that ad?
There's a couple things funny about that ad.
Every time you read it, I want to be in the background being like, that's right, folks, testify. That's right, Brother John, keep talking.
So you want to be like the hype?
Yeah, like
the
like,
hype dwarf?
Well, yeah, but you like see like the old like you know,
yeah,
where
yeah,
well, the hype man. Guy has got the hat and he's like, and you got the guy next to him,
the carnival
like,
barker.
That's right, come here, come on in, guys. Yeah. Listen here to Brother John.
Well, so the other thing that you could do too is like the DMX, like yeah, uh huh.
I don't think I could do that as well as Hype Dwarf.
Anyway, joining us today, John Dobb. John, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
I appreciate you taking time out of your day last minute very much. I know that I messaged you last night. I'm like, hey, what you doing tomorrow? And you're like, real people working stuff? And I'm like, can you not for 40 minutes? So I appreciate it, man.
Oh, you're welcome. I mean, the thing that we're going to be talking about is, you know, kind of a heavy situation and all that
yes.
Went through and I'll just preface it to say things that, you know, out of the whole thing, all I ever wanted at the end of it all, I made a pledge that I want good things to try to come out of this sad situation.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I am kind of hoping for is that you know, by sharing this and talking about it, that people will be able to learn something and that we'll be able to, you know, kind of grow from this and see what kind of good we can have with it. So, you know, I thank you for the opportunity to come on here and to talk to everybody about this.
Yeah, no worries, dude. So just real quick, a little background on who you are, what you do, and then we'll talk about January 5th, 2015.
Right on. So my name is John Dobb. I'm also known on the interwebs as Soy, H-S-O-I. And most of my time actually is spent as a software developer. But in terms of this context here, I have been the lead assistant instructor with Carl Wren at KR Training down here in Central Texas. I've been working with Carl now almost 10 years with him. And also, you know, during all this time, I've trained with the, you know, usual folks that you might expect, you know, Masad Ayoub, Tom Gibbons. In fact, you know, we was there in the Rangemaster Advanced Instructor class that, you know, I took that there with you and with Melody.
Yep.
You know, William April, you know, Caleb Causey, South Mark, you know, Cecil Birch, you know, Kathy Jackson, you know, all these folks I've trained and worked with them over the years and such like that. So that's, you know, and, you know, I'm a USPSA B production class shooter and all. So, but, you know, mostly I'm just some guy here. So that's kind of a little bit perspective about me. So.
So if I were to classify you, I would say that you are the high end of what someone who is significantly into firearms training looks like, right?
And it's very fair.
It's not to say that, you know, there aren't other individuals that have maybe gone further with it, and it's not to say that you won't go further with it, but you have, and especially at the time of this incident, an extreme amount of training compared to other people who need to use a gun typically. So
yes.
let me preface it with that. So why not tell me about January 5th, 2015?
Sure. So January 5th, 2015, I was just coming off of, you know, 2 weeks of semi-vacation and, you know, Christmas and New Year's and such, and was getting ready to get back into the swing of, you know, regular life and going to work and all that kind of stuff. And my habit is I wake up very early in the morning and I go to the gym. And at the time, the gym I went to was within walking distance of the house. So I just walked there. Worked out, came home, nothing out of the ordinary. It's just, you know, it's January, so it's early in the morning, so it's dark and it's cold. But, you know, otherwise nothing of consequence. I get home, I'm very hot, sweaty, so I strip down to just my gym shorts and take the dog out to the backyard so she can do her morning business. And when I come back in, I, you know, encounter my wife. She just got up. And it is now time, you know, our usual little morning habit of, oh, how are you? How'd you sleep? You know, what are you doing today? And a little morning chit-chat and breakfast and such. About 6:15 or so, I decide it's time to start getting ready to go to work and everything. So I go to the master bedroom, go to master bathroom. My wife stays in the dining room just finishing her coffee and her morning readings. And I go to the bathroom, and I was just going to start taking a shower and everything, but before I do, I go and I sit on the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
And I do as most modern people do these days when they sit on the toilet. I have my phone, and I'm just scrolling away. To understand a little bit about just our house, where I'm sitting then, I'm very close to the front of the house as it then approaches the street of the neighborhood. And again, this is about 6:15 to approaching 6:30 in the morning. And all of a sudden, I hear from outside this male voice, maybe male voices, yelling. And I can't quite make out what it is, but for sure, I can say that this is highly unusual. So I call out to my wife, who's still in the dining room, to see if she is hearing this and could maybe get a better bead on the situation. And about this point is where everything starts to get interesting. And in fact, it's going to take me longer to tell you about it than the whole thing itself took. Because what happened then is I hear my wife tell me that there is somebody at the front door. She yells this to me from the dining room. Mm-hmm. That there's someone at the front door. But the thing is, at that time, we had been married about 19 years. And on all that 19 years of marriage, I had never heard this out of my wife, the sheer mortal terror in her voice as she told me there's somebody at the front door.
Right.
So I hop right off the toilet. You know, I go and, you know, I was about to get in the shower, so obviously I didn't have my gun on me, but I just went and I retrieved it from, you know, bedside, and I just hoofed it right out of the bedroom, down the hallway, into the living room and front door area. Now, backing up just a moment, my wife, what she tells me after all this is that she heard outside the front door this howling, and she couldn't figure out what it was. It's like, is that a coyote? That didn't make sense. And then the door starts rattling, aggressive shaking and rattling off the hinges. And about that time, she decides to hightail it and retreat, And she said then the door just exploded. It sounded like an explosion.
Well,
let me interrupt
you right there, and I apologize,
sure.
but we have to go to commercial. So we're talking with John Dobb about an incident that occurred in his home. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s and scatterguns since 1977. A legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories, as well as the new EDC X9, which offers discriminating shooters 1911 match-grade accuracy, superior ergonomics, and concealability, with modern service pistol capacity and reliability at www.wilsoncombat.com. So we're talking with John Dobb about the events of January 5th, 2015. Now, and I'm sorry for interrupting, John.
It's okay.
But as we were getting to the break, you had described how you heard your wife yelling in a way that you had not heard in 20 years of marriage, that you described as sheer terror. And then your front door to your home started rattling aggressively and then pretty much exploded inwards.
Yes.
And that's where we left off. So if you could continue, please.
Certainly. So the interesting thing is, as all that had happened, I heard none of that. Auditory exclusion is a real thing. The only thing that I heard as this all was happening was the sound of my wife's voice.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I registered, you know, hearing. So as that's all happening, I'm blowing down the hallway, and I blow by two members of my family, which later I know were my wife and my daughter, but, you know, thin slicing, and so I didn't quite register it all the way. But I get around the corner, and as soon as I come around the corner, I see my front door is blown wide open.
Mm-hmm.
I see the door frame is blown out. And I see this person who is unknown to me a good 6 to 10 feet inside of my home. And at that point, I present my gun and point it at him. And I tell him to get the F out of my house, get the F out of my house, get the F out of my house.
Yeah.
And he continues, though, to proceed towards me.
Right.
And so because he then starts coming towards me, then I fired my gun. And I kept shooting until I saw that he decided to turn and try to leave out the front door. And so when I saw that he was turning and breaking everything off, I stopped shooting. He got to the front door, collapsed on the front porch just outside the door. And then at that time, I retreated back as far as I could. That allowed me to still, you know, be as safe a distance as I can away, but still keep an eye on what's going on. Because at the time, I'm thinking that I'm getting burglarized. I think maybe dude's got friends outside.
Right.
Don't know what's going on. I'm trying to get away from this. So I start yelling, call 911, call 911. I, you know, managed to reach in my pants, and I had my phone, and I call and have the whole 911 call, and all that goes on. And that's something unto itself. But basically then Austin police ends up showing up. I have everything down, hands up. APD comes in. They take control of the scene. They have me sit down while everything starts to process. And that's about the extent of it. There's a lot of stuff, obviously, about the aftermath as well. And that culminated about 6 months later going to the Travis County Grand Jury, which did give me a true no bill of the events. So there's a lot more, obviously, stuff to it here, but that's about the crux of the actual event that happened.
So do you mind if I back up and ask you a couple of questions?
Sure.
As far as your thought process as this was occurring. Now,
sure.
you say something interesting to me that that I think kind of speaks to the situation a little bit, but you say that you saw two members of your family as you were advancing down the hall towards the threat, I guess, and then you say, and via process of elimination afterwards, you realize this is your wife and daughter, correct?
Yes.
So during that, I guess you didn't really recognize them as specific individuals, but just more of as, okay, these are friendlies?
Yeah, it's interesting. As I reflect back on it, is that I do remember going down the hallway. I do remember blowing by two people. And all that registered in my brain, though, was enough to just say, they're okay. That's family. That's whoever. It registered as okay.
Yeah.
And not something to be concerned about. But exactly who it was, I actually didn't know until afterwards, when then I'm talking with my family and, you know, everybody's saying, you know, here's my experience. Here's my experience. Here's what I saw, heard, did. And we could piece that all together.
Yeah.
So, and I think it's a concept that William April calls thin slicing.
Yeah.
And that's basically what happened there.
Yeah, there's a couple interesting things that are going on there. As far as, and you know, if you don't remember, that's fine. But what I'm curious about mm-hmm. is you were moving down the hall and mm-hmm. you had armed yourself. Do you happen to remember how you had your muzzle oriented when you were moving?
I don't know for certain. As far as I can remember, I had it in a pointed downward position. I'm not going to say Sewell because I don't practice Sewell as a formal thing. But, you know, through all the practice and all the things that we do over at KR Training, you know, we do have things where we'll be in that kind of that number two position of the draw, that retention position of sorts. So the muzzle's pointed out. So I'm, you know, fairly certain based on, you know, not only just, you know, hours and hours and hours, hundreds of hours of my own training, but then hundreds and hundreds of hours of teaching people over the years, you know, that's probably the position that I was in as things went through. Yes.
And that's kind of interesting too. And I think that speaks to sort of the concept of unconscious competence. If you do this long enough, it gets very easy to not point a gun at things that you don't want to point guns at without even necessarily needing to think about it. But I was just curious as far as your recollection of that. So when you find a large enraged individual 10 feet inside of your home, what was your first thought? Was there any moment of derealization, like, huh, this is odd? Or were there any intrusive thoughts during any of this that struck you as weird? Or what was your thought process?
The process that was going through my head was, you know, again, hearing my wife's voice. And, you know, you spend, you know, two decades with somebody, you get to know them pretty well, and you can read a lot into things they say or way they say them. And so I had a pretty good bead that there was something serious going on. And then when you come around the corner, and as your eyes just, you know, pan through the room, and you just see door wide open, frame blown apart, strange person in house, there wasn't necessarily any kind of like, huh, let me try to make sense of this, or
right.
Gee, what could be going on? It's just like, oh, this is potentially very bad. You need to get out of here right now.
Yeah.
Whoever you are, you need to just leave. And given every opportunity to leave, and, you know, didn't leave.
I'm curious, John, about, you see, the interesting thing that you said is you said he was about 10 feet into your house. And I know that in our own homes, we know where certain markers are that tell us certain distances. If you had not had those markers that could give you adequate distance, that he would have seemed closer or maybe even further away than actuality?
I don't know, just because, you know, when you're in the living room there like that, there's just only so much space. And I think for me, in large part, I know one thing that just ended up happening with me is that as I'm already, you know, coming out around the corner, and I ended up just continuing, you know, there was this, and I know that there was some semblance of still a small advancement towards, because it was just, you know, it's like it or don't. And whether we know better or not to do that, you just, you know, to some extent, you end up having to suffer from, you know, monkey brain. And there's just this, you know, advancement of just going in. And, you know, that's one of those things of, well, yes, that's one of the things we try to maybe, you know, train around or train differently. But, you know, things happen as they do sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But in terms to your point, Melody, I can't really say for sure beyond that.
Well, so let me interrupt because we have to go to break again, mm-hmm. and I apologize. Sure. I hate interrupting guests, but especially in shows like this. So thank you again for your understanding and patience with that. Right now we're talking with John Dobb. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Surefire. Know your target and what is beyond it. But how can you really know your target? By shining a really bright light at it, and that's where Surefire comes in. From the new 1200 lumen EDCL 2T handheld, or a 500 lumen EDCL 1T handheld, to the 1000 lumen XH35 or 300 lumen XC1B, Surefire can make sure you never have to yell Aziz light ever again. Now, with more lumens and improved switching, the best just got brighter. Surefire. And as a special offer to Ballistic Radio listeners, you can get 20% off everything at the Surefire.com web store except suppressors and batteries, bearing the discount code AZIZLIGHT. That is AZIZLIGHT. No spaces. Anyway, we're talking with John Dobb about the events of January 5th, 2015. And before the break, we were sort of talking about the distance that the individual had entered into your home, and also kind of your perception of that and things of that nature.
Well, the reason I think it's really important is that a lot of people, when they get an instance like this, have all sorts of different effects that happen. Time dilation, either it speeds up or slows down. Distance becomes a very interesting concept as far as perception. Like you said, John, auditory exclusion. And it's interesting to hear the effects on you and what you actually did experience and what you didn't.
Indeed, yeah. It's. I think the biggest thing that in the moment affected was absolutely that you get a semblance of tunnel vision. You do get the auditory exclusion. And, in terms of, distance and proxemics, it's just a matter of, well, I know where I am in my house, mm-hmm. but in terms of measurements and things like that, it's just a relative measure of, I know he's close.
Yeah, yeah.
Things like that, yeah.
So at that point, you had issued verbal commands. Individual did not comply with those, starting advancing on you further, and you made the decision to shoot. Was that a conscious decision of, like, well, I'm a need to shoot this guy? Or did you find yourself processing that information sort of subconsciously and just begin shooting before you were aware of it? Or how did that work in your head?
That was a conscious decision. Well prior to this, had decided where the line was. This is okay, you cross this line and it's going to be met with this kind of a response. And, a situation of somebody, obviously forcible entry into the home, my wife and my three children basically behind me, and having this approach towards, you can say that it's demonstrable that there is ability, there is opportunity, and there's demonstrable, jeopardy, mm-hmm. In this. And you look at all the totality of the circumstance. And, that's like, well, that's the line, and that line has been crossed. And I, made a conscious decision to give verbal commands to say, get out. There was every opportunity to just turn around. But instead, the response that I received was to continue proceeding towards me. And that's like, look, in the face of all of that, it's come as far as it can go. And that was it. So it was absolutely a conscious decision.
So when you made the decision to shoot, were you thinking about the shooting at all as it was occurring, or was it just sort of watching the entire situation? What was your attention focused on?
My attention was focused on this person, okay. and what their behaviors were and what they were doing. As you said, at this point, it's demonstrable to have a level of the unconscious competence. So that was able to just do what it needed to do. And so I could focus on what was happening. And like I said, it's the same token of I could watch what was happening. And as soon as I saw that they made a decision to stop and to change their direction and turn and try to go out the front door, I stopped shooting.
Mm-hmm. So I know this is a this is a popular argument, and I have several thoughts on it. But to focus on the mechanics of shooting in general right now and the mechanics of shooting under stress, and I've shot with you. I've seen you shoot, and you're very solid and competent shooter. Do you recall using your sights while you were shooting, or was that something that you inferred based off of the results, or was a sight picture even necessary for the distance you were at?
I have no recollection one way or the other about the use of sights.
Mm-hmm.
I've thought about long and hard and tried to remember. I cannot recall whether I did or I did not. But also at the distances, the distance that it was, which was fundamentally about 2-3 yards
mm-hmm.
or so, you know, that's something where just, you know, good body index is sufficient.
Yeah. Do you think it was one of those things where it was, let me ask you this.
Sure.
Did you have the gun up in your eye line?
Yes.
So do you think it was one of those things where whether or not you were aware of their use after the fact, during the event, they were at least probably semi getting looked at?
Probably, because again, you know, that's how we're always trained. That's always how it is to actually bring everything up to the eye line and to work on that. So I'd like to, you know, assume that that's what happened. But again, like I said, I have no true conscious recollection one way or the other. If there was definitive, oh yes, I saw, you know, that red fiber optic, you know, they're like a giant beacon, I have no recollection of that.
Right. So do you recall were you aware of how many shots you fired during the incident, or was that something that you learned after the fact?
After the fact.
Okay. How many did it end up being, if you don't mind me asking? Five.
Okay. Yes.
All five hit their intended target?
Yes.
Okay. So the individual turns to exit, you stop shooting, they end up on your front porch, you retreat further back in your home and sort of begin the process of trying to get the police there, call 911 and things like that. I assume you've heard your 911 call and also your wife's.
Yes.
Was there anything that struck you about either of those, listening to them after the fact?
The biggest thing that actually struck me wasn't so – well, a few things struck me. It wasn't so much me, but the process of 911. For instance, you're transferred around a lot.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to get various, you know, whether it's police or EMS or whomever. So you get transferred around a lot. You answer the same questions over and over and over because it's different people asking you for vital information like, you know, address and such. But the one thing that also got me was one thing, you know, I just told them somebody had, you know, this in my house and this is what happened. And then at one point, the dispatcher wanted me to approach them and see if they were okay. And of course, my answer was no. That's not happening. And then another thing that they kept doing was they kept asking me, where's the gun? And I said, it is in my hand. They said, you need to put it down. And I said, I will wait until the police are here.
Yeah.
Because I understand exactly why. They just know shooting man with gun. And I fit the description of man with gun.
Yeah.
So I understand completely why they want to do that. But on the same token, I don't know what's going on. I just know what just happened. I have no idea what potentially is coming. I am not going to do that. So I think that's the thing that really struck me a lot about the 911 calls was how much, you know, dispatch doesn't know what's going on. They're trying to do their best to manage everything. I hold nothing against them for what it is. But it's important for us to realize that we're the ones there. We're the ones managing the situation. And to some extent, we have to sit there and realize that what dispatch tells us isn't necessarily a command or an order that we must obey. We must be able to mitigate what they're saying against what is actually going on and that we're observing.
Well, and and we got about a minute left in this segment, but it seems very easy for someone that is removed by a telephone connection and many miles of separation to give tactically unsound advice. You know what I mean? So,
absolutely.
We'll get back into this in a second. We have to go to break. Right now, we're talking with John Dobb. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. So we're talking with John Dobb about the incident of on January 5th, 2015. So we have an individual that has presented a deadly threat to you and your family inside of your home. And you've shot them what turns out to be five times. They've exited the home and are now on your front porch. You're waiting for police to arrive. Now, we've only got this one segment, so I'm going to try and get us through as much as possible. But what was going through your head during all this? Was there any, like, huh, this is not how I expected my day to go? Was there like, I wonder how this is going to turn out? How was that for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as it was actually unfolding, it was just like, oh my gosh, this is, you know, wow, this is crazy. I need police here real fast, please, now, because I don't know what's going on. And, you know, if this could get worse, and I wanted it to stop thoroughly. And, you know, police being here usually should get things to stop pretty thoroughly. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, as the rest of it was all going on, and, you know, they're taking control of the scene, and I'm just told to just sit there, there's definitely a lot of, okay, gosh, what's going to happen? What's going to unfold? How's this all going to go? Oh, gee whiz. You know, thinking about, you know, what things going to happen in the press? What's going to happen with my job? What's going to happen with my family, my personal life? Just, you know, oh, gosh, you know, and then there's the whole legal that's going to come, you know, and that's where I'm thankful for things like, you know, Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network, which I have been and still am a member of, which was very, very instrumental towards, you know, bringing a lot of peace of mind to me after the fact. So,
right. And I'm actually a member, too, and I believe Melody is as well.
Yes.
So for those that don't know, it is a form of insurance that is run by Marty Hayes, and also Tom Givens is on the board of directors, I want to say.
Masad Ayoub as well.
Masad
Ayoub. Mm-hmm. Masad Ayoub, Dennis Tuller. Yep.
Yeah.
John Farnham.
Yep. Individuals that I highly respect and trust implicitly. So if you're interested in that, it is certainly an option and a good option and one that I recommend. So were you at any point handcuffed?
No, I was never handcuffed. I was never arrested. I was never charged with anything.
Yeah. So did that surprise you or not really, given the totality of the circumstances?
On the one hand, you know, I've always been prepared that, you know, that is something that could happen. And if it does, just let it happen because they need to sort out the situation. I think that in my particular case, it didn't happen because the way the circumstance looked. As a matter of fact, I can say that as I spoke with a neighbor of mine afterwards, they said that as, you know, things were actually unfolding, they went up to one of the police officers and just asked them, you know, hey, what's going on? And the officer's response was, it looks like just, you know, a burglary. Someone was trying to break into their home. So mm-hmm. I think from APD's perspective that's what it looked like. And so that's, you know, how obvious, and as they could see, everything, you know, was fairly there. It looked fairly much like that. So there was, you know, APD was nothing but professional and polite and very good, especially with my wife and my children. And doing a whole lot there. So I think just, you know, given how they handled everything, if it worked, you know, that's how it all came down.
Yeah. So let me ask you this, if you don't, and feel free to not comment. How are you after this? How is your family after this? The individual ended up passing away after you shot him.
Yes.
I'm going to ask a question. It's going to sound cavalier, but I don't mean it to. It's just there's no real easy way to ask. How bothered were you by all of this afterwards?
I lost 6 pounds in one day.
Mm-hmm.
But I was able to sleep okay because, again, this is the kind of thing I had made a decision very long ago when – that here's a line.
Yeah.
And if that line is crossed, that that's that, you know, and that's a very high bar to have to get over, and it was. And so, you know, I know that I'm doing this here in protection of myself, my wife, my children, and that's not something to lose sleep over.
Right.
I will say that, you know, once it was known who this person was and what the circumstance was, well, that's where the tragedy of the whole story really kicks in. And, you know, that's certainly kind of sad, and that certainly does, you know, weigh on me some. But, you know, it things were there with us for a while in the aftermath. You know, you'd hear maybe a knock on the door and you might jump a little bit or things like that. And, you know, Masada, you often talks of the Mark of Cain syndrome, and certainly that is something that even still to this day can kind of linger a little bit for me. But, you know, for the most part, like I said, because I had, you know, gone through a lot of training, a lot of inoculation, a lot of things to help, you know, understand the weight and gravity of this, especially with my family, because they know what I do. They know what I'm involved in. We talk a lot. Right. That helped a lot of us all to be able to manage here and get through it in the aftermath.
So I guess let me ask you this in the last couple minutes that we have left. What were your takeaways as far as things that you did well or things that you wish you had done differently?
Well, one thing I can say I wish I'd done differently was always on my agenda to put those big, you know, 3-4-inch screws through the strike plates on the front door. And it was just one of the things on the honey-do list that just never got honey done.
Right.
And that may have made a difference here. It may not have. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Can't what if that. But that's one of those things. But, you know, I think the biggest thing for me, and is especially a takeaway for folks listening to this, is to be considerate of the aftermath. We spend so much time with our, you know, training money and our training, you know, time, whatever, around training for that moment. But the moment lasts just seconds. The aftermath lasts the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And that aftermath is something that's very important, I think, that people need to try to think about, be prepared for, and work with so that they can manage through that. And, you know, I think that one thing that was, you know, I have done well was to have been prepared for that, both like, you know, already having the ACLDN membership in line, having, you know, taken, you know, enough force-on-force scenario training, just being through this, being prepared and being ready for that. Has done a whole lot to help manage things in the aftermath. So I think that's a really big take home, is to spend time thinking about after the event and not just so much for the event.
Well, and I'm reminded of something that John Chapman said to me on the show once, is that the shooting or gunfight or whatever is won years before the actual event. And it's a culmination of quite a bit of time and effort and things of that nature. But like you said, the after is kind of a big deal that nobody talks about.
Indeed. I wish that was something that we talked about more and covered more, but I know that part of the problem is that it doesn't sell. It's not fun. People don't want to accept that and think about that. So, but I really hope that more people will, because it's, like I said, it's going to be something with you for the rest of your life. So doing your best to be able to handle that and manage that is so important.
Real quick, and then we're at the end of the show, but God forbid that you found yourself in another violent encounter that was a lethal force event. Do you think that the having been through the one would better prepare you for the other, or do you think that that's entirely dependent on the individual?
That's really hard to say. I think it is going to be dependent in part on the individual and their preparation and their mindset and just their outlook on life. So I think that becomes just an individual thing if we really want to get down to it.
Yeah. John, thank you so much for taking time out of your day, man. I know this is not an easy thing to talk about. I certainly appreciate you trying to help everyone that's listening.
Welcome. Again, thank you for having me on to let me talk, because I hope that some good will come out of this.
Yeah, definitely, man. I look forward to seeing you I guess in June we're going to be out at Carl's place teaching our class, and I know that you had to miss it last time because of family stuff, but I can't wait to be on the range again with you, brother.
Absolutely, looking forward to it. We'll see you all then later this summer.
Yeah, perfect. Hey, be safe, man. Happy holidays to you and yours, and I will talk to you soon.
All right, talk to y'all later. Thank you, John.
Bye-bye.
All right. Hey, guys, make sure you check out our website, BallisticRadio.com, like our Facebook page at Facebook.com/BallisticRadio, and keep leaving those 5-star review on iTunes. We really appreciate it. Helps us out. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe. See you next week.